me Tom Forrest again. Well, we're moving on a bit. March already and Easter will soon be with us. To me, it hardly seems 5 minutes since Christmas. I don't know, but life doesn't half seem to go at a pace these days. Even in the country. And I suppose in a very short while, we should be very much more aware of speed when this new road is there cutting's finished. But what a time they've had with all the wet. But during this last few weeks, they really had a move on. And you can see the bridges coming up and taking real shape now. But the trouble is, you never know where you're going to get out. There always seems to be a temporary closing of some road or other. Ah, but what surprises me and a lot more of us here at Ambridge is that now the main part of the road is cut, it is difficult to remember what it was like before, even to the shape of the fields and the trees that had to come down to make way for it. Ah, but I think the farmers are getting used to moving their stock around now. You know, it was quite a novelty at one time. Everybody stopped and stared. But today we just takes it in our stride. And I'd better take my usual job in my stride and tell you what else had been happening this week, hadn't I? Well, now, John Tregoran finds Harvey Grenville wandering about Arkwright all late at night, and he invites him back to Blossom Hill Cottage for a nightcap. Well, just as they're leaving the hall, they hear a van approaching up the drive. Anyway, we start this morning where John and Harvey put out the lights and wait to see who's paying such a late call.
Good Lord above, what do you make of that?
Well, I've always wanted to see one. Now I have seen one. It's a ghost, a real live ghost.
It's a clever sort of ghost to be able to drive vans around.
But look at that face. It's dead white.
I know.
Whoever or whatever it is, it spotted us, so we might as well put a bold face on it.
I'm still stuck in the doorway. Is it you, Rita? But if so, I want you in a desperate hurry.
Ha! Dewey Hood! Still in his white apron and baker's hat.
And a face still smothered in flour.
Evening, Dewey. Do you know for a second we thought you were a ghost? You're doing your baking at Arkwright Hall now.
Well, but you, John Cronin. You seen Rita Flynn around?
No. She was here at the club earlier in the evening.
Well, I know that. And I know who she was with.
Yes, that big Irish chap, O'Leary. But how did you know she was here? You haven't been to the club this evening.
Oh, don't worry. I know every move she makes near enough.
Well, look, do you know Harvey Grenville, relative of Mr. Grenville, up at the manor? This is Dewey Hood, our worthy village baker.
How do you do?
How do you do, sir? Excuse me, I'll be getting along.
But Dewey, why are you chasing round after Rita?
I know it's late, but
time she was in.
Oh, come. Dewey, Rita's a big girl now.
Well, isn't there? There's been a fire at Ben Rose's bakery in Holland.
Really?
He can't bake tonight, and he can't afford to lose a day's delivery, so he's asked me to help out. Anything to help him fight the big boys, says I, but I need help. Where's my assistant? In the back of a car somewhere with that great big Irish good-for-nothing.
But if you're helping Bemrose out, why can't he give you some labor? He's bound to have some spare.
I don't want Bemrose's spare labor. I want Rita. Good night, gentlemen.
Good night, Dewey.
Poor old Dewey.
Sounds like a slight case of jealousy.
Oh, too true.
But you know, I'm sure I've seen this Irish girl with her equally Irish escort. Saw them in the Bull. She's only about 30, surely. Oh, maybe a year or two more, but far too young for an old chap like Dewey.
Oh, but Dewey doesn't think so. You see, Rita's had a roughish sort of hand dealt her by the men in her life so far. Uh-huh. And she'd settled quietly into a nice little backwater, helping Dewey Hood in his bakery and living in the caravan rent-free. But look, you're not interested in Dewey Hood and Rita Flynn.
Oh, on the contrary, I find it fascinating. Like so many more people in this village.
Don't tell me that you're going to put us in a book.
Oh, good Lord, no.
Good. Well, look, I'll lock up and then we can drift back and have a drink at my place.
Oh, yes, I'd like to do that.
Good.
I'd like to hear more about your efforts at this Hall Club or whatever it is.
Well, I should have thought that Grenville would have told you all the necessary details. It's his baby, really.
It's the younger side I'm interested in. And Charles's ideas about the younger generation are inclined to be a trifle one-sided.
Well, thank goodness somebody agrees with me. I've been telling him that for ages.
Don't you think it was a fundamental mistake to put the youngsters and the older people under one roof?
Oh, now I do. But the original idea seemed all right. It's a social club for the whole village, not just certain age groups.
Mm.
If you're not scared of motor scooters,
no.
You just nip up behind. And we'll see if she can stagger us both to Blossom Hill.
Hi, Jiminy, Ned. You must have been on the job early this morning.
Ah, well, I thought that the sooner we get these new stand-ins ready, the better.
Finish the milking?
Milking's always the first job.
Something went wrong with our alarm clock, and I'm hanged if I had you looking after the dairy. I usually hear you banging about with buckets and churns and things.
Well, I could see as nobody was up, so I thought I'd let you have a bit of a lie in.
Well, you should have woken us. Short-handed as we are just now, there's no time for lying in bed.
Oh, don't you worry. I wish I could sleep same as you, boss, but I can't, and that's that.
Can't you?
I wake between 4 and 5, and I'll be darned if I can get off again. So I always reckon I might as well get up. And these 2 extra stalls for the milk in parlour have got to be done.
Well, what's Mabel say about this getting up at 4 in the morning?
Oh, her moans and groans a bit, but as soon as I'm out of the bedroom, her's all snoring again.
Had breakfast?
No, not as yet. Just a cup of tea and a bit of bread and butter.
Well, you'd better cut away then and put some proper victuals in that lean belly of yours.
Oh, I shan't bother. Mabel's on early this morning at Carol Gray's place, so I told her not to bother about me.
Well, in that case, I'll get Doris to stick an extra rasher or two in the pan.
Oh, no, don't bother.
Oh, yes, and don't argue with the gaffer. Oh, by the way, I spoke to Grenville last night at the meeting we had in Borchester.
Oh, yes. Was Master Phil there?
No.
But he was going to Borchester. That I do know.
Well, he wasn't at the meeting. Anyway, the other day, Phil mentioned to me something about keeping poultry again. And Grenville took it up again last night.
Poultry?
Aye.
I thought you'd had enough. Not worth a candle, you said. Not on a small scale.
No. But Grenville's prepared to do the financing, and we supply on a contract basis to the packing station. He's boosting his egg production side in a big way.
Well, how many head of poultry was he thinking we might manage?
Oh, up to 5,000.
Too much for your Mrs. Standall, don't you think?
Well, that's what I got to work out. I don't want to take on anybody else, over and above the new man we shall be having when we take over the big dairy herd.
Oh, any sign of him are coming yet?
Oh, I've advertised. I had 1 or 2 inquiries. And when they're all in, I shall have to start seeing them.
Hmm.
By the way, have you seen any more of Jet Allard's dog, or rather his niece's?
No. Maybe he's had the word from somebody and he's telling the girl to keep the dog up.
Well, I hope so. I reckon he'd get short shrift from Len Thomas if he showed his nose up on Lakey Hill.
Oh, ah. I like my things to mention out. Let me back to me sandcastle on mud pie day.
Ah, well, don't you forget it's dairy standings we're making, will you? By the way, you have not mentioned Clarice lately. Is she gone out of circulation?
What? You ever heard of a bad penny going out of circulation? No fear.
Well, she's still pestering you.
On and off. Oh, you should have seen the Valentine what I sent her.
One of those comic jobs.
Oh, no, cleverer than that. I sent her a beautiful one with loving verses on it and signed it, Your Secret Admirer.
You wicked old devil. What happened?
Oh, at first her went all crying at it from her husband, or so he told me after. When her finally does show him, he takes one look at the postmark and busts out laughing.
Well, you don't mean you posted it from Ambridge.
No, he did daft look, so the cat was out of the bag then.
That's a dangerous thing to do, Ned. Suppose she didn't think it was a joke.
Eh?
Well, suppose she got the idea that you were rather sweet on her.
Me? Sweet on Clarice?
Ah.
After all what's gone on, twixt her and me.
They might think that that was all a put-up job to disguise your real feelings.
Get away with you, boss. You were pulling my leg.
Well, you never know. Women are funny creatures that way. They'll believe anything if it flatters their vanity. Does Mabel know about it?
Oh, aye. Clarice told her.
Oh.
Hey.
Huh?
Come to think, Mabel has been a bit huffy ever since. I took it as her was upset because I took the mickey out of Clarice again. But you don't think Mabel would think as I would? Oh, no, no, no. He's too daft. Even by Clarice and Mabel to believe. Too daft altogether.
You never know, Ned. You never know. Well, I'll pop and tell Doris about your bit of breakfast. But that'd be a funny thing, Ned, wouldn't it?
Morning, Joey. Good Lord, you look tired. You've been working all night.
I have.
But you said you were going to bed early to nurse your cold. What happened?
In case of having to work all night. When your assistant lets you down, you have to carry on alone. Cold or no cold.
My goodness gracious. Look at all this bacon. You have really been working all night. But we'll never sell this lot.
Bimbo's vans will be collecting most of it in 10 minutes. Had a phone call asking me to help him out. Came to you for help, but oh no.
Bimbo's? In Hollerton? But why?
Had a bit of a fire. Held him up with a day's baking. Expected we'd be able to work together. No.
Now, half a minute, Joey. I didn't know Bimrose was having a fire last night.
Oh, never mind. Job's done.
But however did you manage it on your own?
Not by spending most of the night in the back of somebody's car. That's for sure.
That's a silly thing to say.
Silly thing to do. Sounded like Michael O'Leary.
We'll leave Mike's name out of this, if you don't mind. And just because you pay my wages for the hours I work here, that doesn't give you any right to decide how I spend the rest of me day. Or night, for that matter.
Disappointed in you.
Of all the cheek.
You wasn't even back in your caravan at 3 o'clock this morning.
And who told you that?
Young Joe. She came to see if you was working with me, because she woke up and was worried.
Well, it's heartwarming to find so many people concerned for me moral welfare, to be sure.
I don't want to quarrel with you, Rita. You do a good job here in the bakery, but as you say, nothing to do with me whatsoever mess to get yourself into outside.
If you really want to know what happened last night...
I don't. No business of mine.
Well, nobody would ever think that from the way you carry on. And as for your nasty insinuations, I've just about stood enough of them. I've never said a wrong word to you, Doughy Hood, and you've always been so kind to me. And now you treat me as if I was just a slut.
Sorry.
But it's not like you, Doughy. You're not a man to run down a girl's character without good proof. And even then you wouldn't run her down. You're far too much of a gentleman.
Thank you. If you don't try associating with a few more.
Few more what?
Gentlemen.
I've stood this sort of talk for long enough, Doughy. And I think you'd better find a new assistant.
There's no need to be stupid.
Stupid? Me be stupid, is it? It's you. You're the one who makes his own life a misery with his own stupidity. And all right. There's plenty more jobs as good as this, and plenty more employers who'll treat me with a bit of respect. Plenty more. You're very unkind, Doughy Hood. You of all people. Very unkind.
Now, look, Rita. Ah. Oh, well. That's how she feels. Plenty more assistance. But unfortunately, not like Rita.
Now, who will?
Oh, nothing but one interruption after another. Come in.
Ah, Carol. Herself in person.
And very busy.
I'm looking for Harvey. We're last seen heading in this direction, right?
Right. Obvious slogan of Ambridge is, when in doubt and with nothing else to do, go and waste Carol Graves' valuable time.
To blazes with that. Listen, I've got an idea.
What sort of idea?
An idea for Harvey. Where is he?
Contemplating the freesia and the daps in solitary state. Do go and join him.
Oh, you're coming too. Come on, you're in on this.
Charles, dear, I'm busy. Don't go on to Hollerton for me and I'm...
Come along.
Oh, very well.
This might solve a lot of problems and find Harvey just the niche he's been looking for. Come on, Carol. Let's get hold of him, quick.
Ah, there he is, look. End house.
Yeah, as usual. Sitting there, gazing into space.
Contemplating a daffodil.
I wonder what he's thinking.
From what I've seen of Harvey, I bet you a shilling he's thinking what a pure, wonderful thing a daffodil is compared with the people who cut them and sell them to stick in vases and die. But why are you concerned about his future?
Well, I like old Harvey, you know. He's about the only relative I've got left, and in his own way, he's a great chap. He's full of burning ideals, but only really gets the chance to put them into practice. Well, I'm going to give him that chance. Come on, in we go.
Well, 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 Charles. Don't tell me you've taken a little time off from your money-making and empire building to come and watch the lilies of the field, how they grow. Hmm?
Your botany isn't what it should be, that daff.
A figure of speech, woman, a figure of speech.
Harvey, what were you thinking about just then?
Hmm? Why?
Oh, just a matter of interest. You were gazing in rapt attention at one of those pots of flowers, almost as though you were listening to what they were saying.
That's a nice thought, Charles. Almost poetic. Matter of fact, I was just thinking how charming and pure the daffodils were compared with the people who cut them and cram them into hideous vases.
Did I say something funny?
All right, one shilling, Carol. Clever girl.
Thanks.
That's exactly what Carol said you'd be thinking. Mm-hmm. Bet me a shilling, you'd say just what you did.
Acute perception of character, that's what my fiancée possesses. You watch your step, Harvey. She can read your innermost thoughts. I could be a cad at this moment, but she'll be the best.
It's all right, Harvey. Here's your shilling back, Charles.
No?
I cheated. You see, I had already been in and asked him what he was thinking just before you came.
Oh, I see. Well, all I can say is, Harvey, if you were thinking precisely the same thought 10 minutes or so later, you must either have a one-track mind or else it moves awfully slowly.
Oh, it does. I never did have a quick wit. I reached decisions only by a series of slow, careful deliberations.
Oh, yes. Like the time in the Jap prison camp.
Let's confine the conversation to flowers, shall we, Charles? Do you mind? Oh, I beg your pardon, both of you. Very rude of me to speak like that.
My fault. I should have had more sense.
Come on, Charles. You've got great ideas about Harvey's future, so you said.
My future? Mine?
Yes. Why not?
You mean, I'm rather outstaying my welcome here, is that it?
On the contrary. I want to see you put a few of your theories into practice. John Tregaron's packing up the wardenship of Arkwright Hall.
Well, he's never really had the time to do it properly.
He made a fine job of it, Charles. You're the one who sabotaged things and shut out the youngsters. How can you say John didn't do the job? That really isn't fair.
Disregard that, Harvey. Carol's like a tigress with a cub as far as Tregotta's concerned.
Well, be fair.
Look, whatever's happened, we need the right man as warden there, for the sake of the young and old alike. And I think you could be just the man for the job. Don't you agree, Carol?
Well, yes.
Me? Oh, good heavens, that's not a job for me, surely. But acting as nursemaid to a lot of juvenile delinquents and senile villagers...
And that's not Arkwright Hall, and you know it, Harvey.
It isn't now, but that's what it could become unless someone of the caliber of Harvey here takes on the job. All the people for whom the club was formed are gradually drifting away. Now, you could take the whole place and shake it by the scruff of its neck into a really worthwhile adventure.
Yes, but Charles,
don't discuss it any more at the moment. Sit and look at your daffodils and think about it. And then talk to Tregaron.
I've already talked to him. Nice, sir.
Well, I'll leave it with you. For the next day or two, I'm going to be tied up with this confounded trial of the three hoodlums who tried to burn down my barn. Well, after that little lot's over and done with, perhaps we can have another chat.
Not nervous, Sally?
Nervous? What about, Paul?
Well, after all, you have been warned over the phone.
Oh, that. I shall go into the witness box and tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So help me. The same as I did before when the case came up in the lower court.
Yes, but the assizes can be a lot more formidable, you know. And then, defending counsel will try and tie you up in knots. That's something you didn't have to experience in the lower court because they pleaded not guilty and reserved their defense.
Well, I shall refuse to be tied up. I know what I know, and I shall tell it, whether he likes it or not.
Good, that's the spirit.
Wish that was all I'd got to worry about.
What do you mean, Sally? What's wrong?
Oh, everything.
Now, look, you better tell me if Tony Stoneman has...
Oh, for heaven's sake, Paul. Why must you always jump to the conclusion that Tony's done something mean? He's not like that, Rene. I know you think he tries to take advantage of every girl he meets or takes up, but... Well, he doesn't. I ought to know.
All right, so he doesn't. What are you worried about, then?
Oh, the fact that until you give us your blessing, he just won't go on seeing me. You're spoiling my life, Paul.
Oh, for Pete's sake, Sally. I know I'm your only brother, and we've always been pretty good pals, but don't try to kid me that we're so close that you'd let me stand in the way of you marrying whoever you wanted to.
But it isn't me who's holding back. It's Tony.
I know. Chris told me. I feel the same way she does. I feel that if Stoneman really...
Oh, don't call him Stoneman. So he was a fourth-form pupil and knew the headmaster.
All right. Stop jumping down the throat a minute. Do you mind?
Well, time somebody did jump down your throat a bit more often, too. You talk such rubbish half the time.
Oh, thanks a lot.
Well, you do.
Seems to run in the family. But come on, before we get to Borchester, just what is it you want me to do?
I want you to see Tony. Tell him you were wrong to stand in the way of our getting married. Tell him I've lost half a stone in the past 3 weeks.
Have you?
Yes, I have.
I must say you look well on it.
Oh, pig. We should be serious a minute.
I am serious.
Well, will you see him?
After all I've said to Tony Stoneman about his association with you, you now want me to go and eat humble pie and say, please marry my sister, Tony. Is that it?
Yes. You can put it more nicely than that, though. Just say you withdraw your objections because you now know that Tony's a reformed character.
Hey, that's a tough one. If I knew that, I certainly wouldn't object, Sally. But do I know it? Do you?
Yes, Paul. I really think... Well, it sounds corny. But I do think he loves me and wants to marry me.
And quite plainly, you love him.
Oh, of course.
And I'm the fly in the ointment.
Sort of.
Well, all right. I'll do just as you say, Sally.
Oh, Paul, thanks.
But you must realize this. My going to see Tony and withdrawing my objections puts him right on the spot and calls his bluff. That's if he is bluffing. If he is, and he's using me as an argument to get out of an entanglement with you, well, we shall soon reach the moment of truth. You may find he doesn't want you at all.
I don't believe that, Paul. But if it is so, then it's best I should know for sure, instead of going on like this.
Yes, yes, you've got a point there. All right, then. That's settled. I go and bury the hatchet, so far as Tony and I are concerned, and we'll see where we go from there.
Very good on you to give me a lift in, Mr. Grenville.
Pleasure. How do you feel about facing up to a barrage of questions at the assizes with a judge and jury watching and listening? Be a bit different from when you merely made your deposition in the lower court.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it, as a matter of fact.
This chap Brett is a cunning customer, though.
Oh, I ain't afraid of him.
No, I'm sure you're not. But don't try and be clever with him, Mr. Gabriel. Just confine yourself to a strict and truthful account of what happened, eh?
That's all I intend to do. I don't aim to paint the picture any blacker than what it is for them young chaps, because to my mind it's black enough already.
I agree. Do you remember all that happened on the day in question, or is it beginning to fade from your memory?
I shan't ever forget a detail. Not as long as I live.
Well, all I can say, Mr. Gabriel, is that I hope it's all dealt with efficiently and quickly and they don't waste our time for days and days.
Here we are. And if them chaps does get found guilty...
It'll be a miracle if they found anything else but guilty. Well, either a miracle or a gross miscarriage of justice.
What's this your judge like?
I don't know at all.
I mean, you got no idea what his views am on hooliganism and violence?
No. No, he might be really down on it and keen to stamp it out, or he might be like my cousin Harvey. Tend to find an excuse for everything the youngsters do.
Oh, he's like that, is he?
Yes. We don't see eye to eye, I'm afraid. Not on that.
Well, he wants to try having somebody knock him on the head and boot him while he's lying on the ground. Might make him change his mind.
I doubt it, Mr. Gabriel. He's experienced very much worse than that, I assure you. And he harbors no resentment against those who treated him so badly. I feel more vengeful towards them than Harvey does, and he's the one who suffered, not me. Must be made of better stuff than I am, I suppose. Oh, won't be long now, Mr. Gabriel. Don't forget, the truth, the whole truth and nothing but the truth. No more, no less.
Now then, Miss Johnson, in the evidence you have just given to my learned colleague for the prosecution, you gave a detailed account of what you say happened on the afternoon of the 28th of December, 1960. You told your story very well, almost too well, as though you'd learned it all by heart.
There was no need to learn it, sir. I shall never forget what happened.
Quite, quite. Just confine your remarks to answering my questions, please. Now, let me see. According to your statement, you say three youths in the barn. You saw them from the front of Mr. Gabriel's car with a hedge in between.
It was a low hedge, and I...
Please, allow me to finish. Now, you saw on the floor of the barn a flame, right?
Yes.
That flame was already there, was it not?
Yes, we could see it.
Yes, you saw the flame. But did you see any one of the accused three young men light that flame?
I didn't see them actually put the match to the straw.
Thank you, Miss Johnson.
But what I did see...
Thank
was...
you. We only want the facts, Miss Johnson. Just the facts. We're not interested in what you think was going on in that barn. We only want to know what you saw.
Let me tell you then that
Miss Johnson, please. You've already admitted that you did not see any one of the accused put a match to the straw. Now, I put it to you, Miss Johnson. Had one of these three lads... sheltering in the barn to have a cigarette, had he accidentally dropped the match which set the straw alight, then to you that might have looked as though the action was deliberate, whereas it could just as easily have been the purest and most unfortunate accident.
But I tell you...
Thank you, Miss Johnson. That will be all.
But that's ridiculous.
Miss Johnson?
You asked me what I didn't see. Now let me tell you what I did see in here.
The court is not interested at this stage.
Then the court ought to be.
My lord?
Just one moment, Mr. Brett. Miss Johnson... Having answered Mr. Brett's question in the negative, is there anything you have to add that is relevant and has not already been covered in your statement for the prosecution?
Well, no.
Miss Johnson, at this stage, you must confine yourself to questions asked you by learned counsel. Now, did you or did you not see a match actually applied to the straw in the barn by the hand of one of the accused?
Well, no.
Thank you. Before the next witness is called... I shall order a recess for lunch. The court will adjourn until 2:30 p.m.
Now, Mr. Gabriel, in the statement of evidence you gave in the lower court, you stated specifically that you saw one of these young men applying a match to the straw in the barn.
Yes, I did.
Order, please. Silence in court.
But Miss Johnson states that she didn't see the match applied.
I course I didn't. I was in front of her as we were running into the barn. I blocked her view. That and there, that Ricky, he was alighting the straw with a match.
Mr. Gabriel, you're an old man, are you not?
Yeah, make all that old.
And you suffer from diabetes, which has already affected the excellence of your sight.
Yes, but my sight's all right when I put glasses on, and I got them on when I was a-driving and running into the barn that day.
I put it to you that you didn't see the match actually struck or put to the straw. You have a reputation for being a crank.
Now, look here, you start being insulted to me, and I shall be insulted back.
Please. So I put it to you that your view of what took place was rather affected by your own opinions regarding these young men on motor bicycles. Well, Mr. Gabriel?
Well, what?
You heard what I have just put to you.
Yes. am I supposed to do? Put it back?
Don't you think that there is a chance that your whole evidence was slightly tainted by your desire to have revenge on these three boys?
Does you mean that after taking the oath here in the witness box, I pardoned myself just for the sake of getting me own back? I resent that remark, my lord.
Please, Mr. Gabriel.
The witness must answer the question.
Oh, well, the answer is no.
Thank you, my lord. Very well now. Tell me, Mr. Gabriel, according to your own statement, you say you hurled yourself forward at the three youths and set about them.
I know I did. I said I hurled myself forward to try and stamp out the flames, and then they said about me. One of them said, the old fool, meaning me, is putting out the flames.
Almost immediately afterwards, you fell over and bumped your head, knocked yourself out.
I never said that.
But that might conceivably have happened.
It might, but it didn't. That chap there, the one with the scar, he hit me on the head. You ask Sally Johnson, I saw him do it.
Doesn't it strike you as a rather frightening thing to do? To hurl yourself at these three boys with a stick in your hand and a fierce dog at your heels? Not exactly a friendly approach.
Weren't meant to be.
Yet you're surprised when these young men defend themselves. To them, you must have appeared like a raging madman, suddenly appearing from nowhere, intent on doing them some damage. No wonder they acted in self-defense.
I did not strike one of them. I didn't have the chance. I was struck down from behind. I still got the scar on the back of my head to prove it.
You say you were knocked unconscious?
For a minute or two, yes.
Yet you were able to set your dog onto one of the defendants and encourage the animal to make a savage attack on him.
Not me. I was out cold when my dog Butch went into the attack. Any dog would go for somebody who was attacking his master. Butch wouldn't have gone for this chap if it hadn't been that he saw this here fellow was just about to boot my face in.
When did you come round from your swoon?
In time to see that chap Ricky there get out a flick knife and go for the dog. Sally tried to stop him.
Ah. That was after the dog had attacked the other youth.
What? Yes.
But, Mr. Gabriel, think now. You say your dog attacked the defendant. Not because you set him on to do so, but because the dog thought he was going to kick you while you were on the floor.
Yes.
But if you were unconscious until after that point, how did you know anyone was going to try and kick your face in, as you so elegantly phrased it?
Well, Sally told me this chap said, shall I put the boot in me? And that Ricky fella said, why not teach the old fool to mind his own business?
Mr. Gabriel, I want facts, not hearsay. Can you say for sure that your face was going to be kicked at by the defendant? Did you see him raise his foot? Or did you hear him say that he intended to do it?
No, I... But I did, but Sally did, and when I come round, I was lying on the floor, and Sally was trying to stop Ricky there from using his knife on my dog.
Thank you, Mr. Gabriel, as I thought. Tell me, if a friend of yours was being savaged by a fierce brute of a dog, wouldn't you want to do something about it? Mr. Gabriel... Kindly answer my question.
Not I. It's got nothing to do with the case.
I'm merely trying to put to you and to the jury that these three unfortunate youths, who stopped for a smoke in a barn, were suddenly attacked without warning by a crazy old man and an equally aggressive young woman, not to mention a vicious dog. In self-defense, they naturally tried to prevent themselves getting hurt. But without success, I may say. And now you, Mr. Gabriel, and your associates in this venture, seem to be telling the story the other way round altogether. Why? What have you got against these young men? What have they done to you?
You want to know?
Yes, I do.
Well, I'll tell you. They've tried to fire a barn full of hay. They've knocked me out cold. They've attacked a young girl that I was with and made her mouth bleed. They've tried to kill my dog with a flick knife, and finally they tried to knife Mr. Grenville because he come to our rescue. Apart from that, I've got nothing against them.
Proceed, Mr. Brett.
I see no point in putting further questions to this witness, my lord. I would suggest that his evidence is quite unreliable.
That is for the jury to decide, Mr. Brett.
Mr. Grenville, before we go any further into the evidence you have just given, is it true that you wrote this article in a local paper recently?
I wrote an article in the Borchester Echo.
This is it. It is. With your permission, my lord, I will pass it round for the jury to examine. Briefly, it is a scathing attack on the teenagers of today. And it goes on to state that the only way to cure juvenile delinquency and bring young people back to law and order and sanity is to bring back corporal punishment.
I wrote that article, and I stand by what I said in it. It has nothing whatever to do with this case.
Ah, has it not now? I suggest that it has. The whole article exhibits a burning and malicious desire to condemn and denigrate in the most contemptuous terms the youth of Britain today.
That is not true.
Please allow me to finish.
Not when what you say is quite untrue. If you've read the article, you'll know that I don't refer to the youth of Britain as a whole, en masse, but to the hooligan fringe who spoil things for everyone and everything with whom they come into contact.
Young people like the three defendants, in fact.
Precisely.
So you admit that you are busily conducting a campaign against youths like the three accused?
I don't admit anything of the kind.
I submit that you do. You're not only too pleased when the slightest opportunity arises to malign and, in fact, to prosecute these unfortunate youths.
I am not prosecuting. The police are doing that. I'm merely giving evidence as to what actually happened on the day in question.
Mr. Grenville, please confine yourself to answering my questions. Now then, am I right in saying that you understand judo or jiu-jitsu?
You are.
So that when, as you say, someone comes at you with a knife in his hand, you can cope with the situation?
I hope I shall always be able to. It's one way of staying alive.
Please. So being a judo expert, when this frightened young boy defends himself from your attack by drawing a knife, do you quietly disarm him and make him see reason? No, Mr. Grenville. You deliberately break the boy's arm, deliberately and sadistically. And later when the poor youth tells you his arm is broken, you say, that was the object of the exercise.
Perhaps you'd be good enough to consider my position.
No consideration of any kind can blind us to the plain fact that you snapped this young boy's arm as though it were a rotten twig.
Yes, but you must realize...
You probably enjoyed carrying out the theories laid down in your newspaper article. I hope the jury will consider that.
Please don't twist the facts. Let me explain.
You are taller and much stronger than this youth.
Mr. Brett, if all this is really relevant, I think the witness has the right to express his point of view.
Yes, my lord.
Thank you, my lord. I only wanted to repeat what I've already said, and which the defense counsel seems conveniently to have forgotten. That when I arrived at the barn in response to a girl's screams for help, she was in that young man's arms, struggling with him. He had a knife and her mouth was bleeding. Then he came for me with the knife and yelled something about the fact that he'd been waiting to get me. Well, Mr. Gabriel was on the ground, bleeding from a head wound. There were three young hooligans, and I was the only real opposition. I'm afraid that when the youth came for me, I didn't have time to think about disarming him. I acted instinctively.
I see. Proceed, Mr. Brett.
No further questions to this witness, my lord.
In that case, before you call your witnesses for the defense, Mr. Brett, the court will adjourn till 4:30. Members of the jury, I now have the task of outlining the evidence you have heard and of reminding you of the facts of the case, in order that you may retire and consider your verdict as to whether these three youths are guilty or not guilty of the offenses with which they are charged. If, after hearing the facts again, you feel that you have any reasonable doubt in your mind, then you must give the benefit of that doubt to the accused. Defending counsel has pointed out the fact that the accused are only youths. They are, however, old enough to be held responsible for that action if they commit crimes against the general public. You have heard the defense claim that the youths accidentally dropped a match after lighting their cigarettes and that this caused the fire in the barn. Against this, you have heard police evidence that no cigarette ends were to be found on the floor of the barn, and when the contents of the young men's pockets were examined, again there were no packets of cigarettes to be found. It has also been suggested that the youths were victims of a violent and unprovoked attack by witnesses Gabriel, Johnson, and Grenville. And against this, you have the story of the events as told by these three witnesses, which does not agree with the statements made by the accused. Let us then examine the unarguable facts. Three young men on motorcycles drove out into the country one afternoon. They parked their motorcycles in the private grounds of an estate Then all three of them went into a barn which was full of hay and straw, and it also was sided.
Well, Harvey, that's that.
Didn't take the jury long to bring in a verdict of guilty on all counts.
No, they weren't out 5 minutes. Anyway, what other verdict could they have reached on the evidence?
Yes, the case was pretty cut and dried. Mind you, at one stage I had a feeling the jury were looking at Charles just a trifle worriedly.
When counsel went on about the newspaper article and tried to build up poor Charles as a sadistic monster with a lust for being cruel to teenagers. I think Charles won the day, though.
Oh, yes. Yes, on the whole, poor Stephen Brett and his sarcasm didn't really get anywhere.
No, I had a hunch that the judge was getting a bit tired of it.
But what else could Brett do? I heard him talking to one of his clerks on the way out. He didn't seem the least perturbed at the way the case went. It sounded to me as though he'd expected it all along.
What did you think of the sentences?
Oh, pretty stiff. 2 years in prison for the two older ones and a borstal institution for the younger one who ran away.
But don't forget, two of them had been in trouble with the police before.
Yes, and from the comments that were made about the threats against the witnesses, it seems pretty clear that if any attempt is made by so-called friends of the convicted youth to take revenge on a witness or witnesses, well, they'll be asking for trouble in a big way.
My goodness, yes. One or two of the teddy boy types in the public benches were shuffling their feet and trying to avoid his eyes.
It's to be hoped that those remarks will be published loud and clear in the local papers.
Oh, they will be. Don't worry. Ah, here they come.
Oh, you waited for me. Good. I've got my own car, though, sir, if you'll have to, Carol.
Yes, plenty of transport for all concerned, including Mr. Gabriel.
Oh, I don't you fret about me, Mr. Grenville. I can get a bus.
You'll do nothing of the sort.
Anyway, congratulations to you both.
There's nothing to congratulate us about. I feel no sense of satisfaction at sending three youngsters to jail.
Oh, mind you, they did ask for it.
Oh, yes. And, of course, that defending counsel got us all on the go by suggesting we were lying.
Yes.
If he'd played it down a bit, well, the judge might not have been so severe.
Oh, I don't know. The public has to be protected from behavior like that.
Oh, I know they asked for it, and I know the public has to be protected. But what a waste. Waste of time, waste of money, and a waste of... And what do they think they've gained from it all? What?
Nice work, Ned lad.
Ah, though he says it just shouldn't. That ain't a bad bit of ploughing on this field. Tis a bit awkward as fields go. If you ain't careful, you can have quite a lot of headland.
Get on with you. Modern equipment, properly used, has more or less done away with headland.
Ah, properly used is right. You've got to know what you may do with.
Got pretty well a cultivation to catch up with. Start seeing whether we can get some barley in tomorrow.
The wet autumn's played us up a bit so far as our planting and ploughing goes.
Ah, it has that.
One thing, everybody's in the same boat. If you can't get on the land because of floods and rain, well, there it is.
Well, what bothers me is whether we're going to get good enough crops to cover our feed requirements for the new herd.
Well, the t'others will have to muck in and out, won't they? You're all working together.
Ah, I know, but they've got stock to feed as well as us.
I'll tell you what, boss.
What?
With extra dairy cows to feed, you could do with another barn. It'll mean extra hay, extra silage, and more deliveries from the compounders. I got a feeling we're going to run short of room.
Aye, I've had my eye on the same problem. I wonder if there's any way of running up something fairly cheap.
Well, the advisory people have always been very helpful, but why don't you ask them along again?
That's not a bad idea at all, Ned. After all, they were the people who told us how to replan for our present herd. They'll be the best people to help us plan for the bigger one.
After all, we ain't done much yet so far as accommodation's concerned. All we're doing is putting up extra standing.
Well, don't want to spend money on alterations just for the sake of it. All the same, I'll get the advisory people along to give the whole setup the once-over. Any more bother at home, Ned?
What?
At home. Any more bother with Mabel or Clarice about the Valentine card you sent?
Oh, my Lord. I reckon as Mabel has took the needle about it a bit.
Well, you should have sent Mabel one as well.
That's the trouble, I did.
Eh?
I sent her a comic one, you see. And when her found out that I'd sent a pretty one with lovey-dovey verses to her sister Clarice, well...
Oh, she's pulling your leg, man. Mabel knows how you feel about Clarice.
Women are funny cattle, no doubt about it. You can't tell what complexion they're going to put on anything. I offered to take her to the pictures and there's no use trying to soft soap me now.
What did you say to that?
I told her not to act and talk like a daft old faggy.
Oh, nothing like pouring oil on troubled waters.
I heard her took offence again then. Asked me why I didn't go and take Clarice to the pictures.
I tell you, she's really pulling your leg, having you on. Shouldn't be surprised if both of them are getting a big laugh out of all this.
You reckon so?
Of course I do. And they know only too well how you feel about your sister-in-law, Clarice. And they know the bit of devilment that made you send her a pretty valentine, anonymous, just to cause a bit of trouble. Now they're playing it, so you're the one who's in trouble.
Oh, no, I ain't.
Ah, you are, you know. I can see the wrinkles in your brow.
The more my missus is at loggerheads with me, the more chance I get to nip out at night and have a pint. When we'm the best of pals, I have to stay in with her to keep her company. Water, what is the telly?
Ah, you'll do. Got an answer for everything, haven't you?
Ah, well, I reckon the field's done as well as I can do it, Bob.
It's time you knocked off and went for your tea. You can give me a lift back to the farmhouse.
Ah, jump up then. Only let me on it, me tackle first.
Righto.
Water with it or soda?
Oh, back of soda, please.
Yeah, end of a perfect day, I don't think. No use reproaching yourself, Charles.
I'm not. Blighters got what they deserved. I just don't feel any sense of triumph.
What do you feel then?
I feel we should try and do something to counteract this teenage problem.
Taking on a pretty big job. You said yourself, it isn't a teenager's en masse. It's a lunatic fringe, so to speak. And you'll find them bobbing up all over the place. What can you do?
Well, I can make sure that the youngsters in this district have a clean record. Or rather, you can.
You mean that I should take over Arkwright Hall, as you suggested, and concentrate on the younger element?
Or better still, try and get both young and old to see each other's point of view.
Tall order, Charles.
It's challenging, I agree, but... When did you ever turn your back on a challenge?
I wonder. Carol thinks it's a great idea.
Oh, she's a charming person. However did you manage to capture her, Charles?
Oh, it's a long story. And don't change the subject.
When are you getting married?
Well, all being well, September.
Why wait so long?
It isn't my idea. Believe me, I'd get married tomorrow if Carol would agree.
Well, now, let me see. September. Tell you what, Charles. If you'll put up with me here until then, I'll stay on and try to shake this love into shape in the next 6 months. And you marry and bring your blushing bride to the manor. You certainly won't want Cousin Harvey barging in, not in the same house anyway.
That's true enough.
So, come September, unless I get bored with the whole project before then...
No, you won't do that. I know you too well.
Never can tell with me. But I buzz off in September for the Far East, having had a fairly cushy time here in Ambridge.
Couldn't be better.
Except that I somehow don't think you'll want to be. You'll stay on.
So then, Eddie says to me, all sarcastic-like, that I was an old man with diabetes.
Well, so you be, poor old fellow.
I tell you, Ned Larkin, I got more red blood and vigor in my veins than two average chaps of my age. Oh, how do then, Tom? A pint?
Take him up on it quick, Tom. He's in a generous mood.
I want a word with you first, if you don't mind, Walter.
Oh, why, of course, Tom, lad, of course. Any time. What can I do for you?
Well, there's no reason why you shouldn't have a pint while you're talking, is there?
I'd like a word with Walter in private, if you don't mind, Ned.
Me? No, I don't mind. I'll set the cards up at the table for some crib, Walter. You playing, Tom? Three-handed?
No, not tonight. I just want a word with Walter.
All righto. Well, come over when you're ready, Walter.
Right on it, Ned. Well, what's up then, Tom? You look darn serious about some of that starting.
Yes. What have I done to upset you, do you reckon, Walter?
You upset me, Tom. But you ain't, as far as I know. How do you mean?
I've been told as you was in the Cat and Fiddle last night or the night afore, and according to reports, you were saying one or two things about me as I wouldn't have expected from an old pal.
What, me? Run you down behind your back? Who's been a-laying this poison down then, Tom? What is it I'm supposed to have said, and why? But come on, let's be hearing your side of the story while old Ned's getting the crib board set up.
Yes, well, you can forget crib for a minute or two if you don't mind.
Oh, now, first of all, before you blows off steam, who told you I've been blabbing me mouth off against you?
Never you mind.
Aye, but I does mind, Tom. In the first place, I'd like to be sure if the chap what's trying to cause the trouble between us was actually in the Cat and Fiddle at the time.
Oh, he was there, all right. For the landlord himself, Alec Massey.
Oh, old Alec, was it? I was for a start-off. He wouldn't say nothing pleasant about me, because I spent most of the time I was there comparing his bitter with Jack's here at the Bull, and not in Alec's favor, I might tell you.
Anyway, to get down to brass tacks, Walter, I understand that the conversation come round to children.
Yes, come to think on it, it did. I said as you and Prue was making wonderful difference to them two little lads what you took on, which is true, and I admire you both for it. If you'd rather I hadn't said that, well, I'm sorry, Tom, but it certainly wasn't anything but a compliment to you both.
Go on, though, that's not all, is it?
Ain't it?
Didn't you say anything about if you was in my shoes and was married to a very nice young woman like Prue, then you wouldn't need to be bothered with adopting children. You'd be having some of your own.
Yes, well, now now you mentions it, Tom.
Ah, yeah. Now it comes out, eh?
Fred Raggett. Ah, you knows what Fred's like. Always calls a spade a blinking shovel. Well, he said, what's wrong with old Tom and his missus, then? Fine strapping chap as he is, what's he doing fostering somebody else's kids?
The damn cheek.
Oh, well, I said something about us Gabriels was always men of different stuff to that. Ah, yeah, you knows the way I talk, Tom.
Ah, I do.
It was just a remark as anybody might have made. And Fred Raggett said it anyhow, not me. Oh, be your age, Tom. You go around fretting and bellyaching about it, and folks will start a-talking.
We'll start talking, whatever do you mean? What have folks got to talk about? As far as me and Prue's concerned, what business is it of theirs?
Oh, I'm sorry, Tom. You know what blokes am when they get together. Always making some crack or another. But I promise you that nothing was said offensive now, honest.
And another thing. What about the remarks you made about my old dog, Judy? What about them, then?
Judy?
Aye.
Now what am I supposed to have said?
If you couldn't understand how a fellow that had had a dog for 12 or 13 years as a constant companion could ever give the poor old thing away.
Oh, truth. I must say, Alec Massey seems to have been doing his best to lay the poison down. Just because I said that his bitter was off. Now, look, what happened was this, Tom. Somebody said, why was it that you give Judy away to John Tinkerton just before her died? I said that I didn't know it. For the life of me, I couldn't understand it, and I can't. Neither can anybody else.
Now, look. My old Judy was a gun dog. That was her life. Her was finished as a gun dog, and I got to have a good one to replace her. And I got to train the new one. But can't you see it would have been heartbreaking to shut Judy up in the house while I went off shooting with her successor? I tried it, and her cried all day. But I couldn't take her with me. I couldn't keep up, or could hardly see.
Oh. And you couldn't bring yourself to have her put to sleep, eh?
No. Neither me nor Prue could face up to that. So when John Tregoran suggested that he should have her for her last few days, well, it was like putting an old horse out to grass. That's how we saw it.
Oh, yes. Yes, I see. Now it begins to make sense.
Folks have said to me, why not have kept her as house dog, as a pet? But Judy wasn't a household lap dog, or was a gun dog, or was a worker. Shutting her up in the house while I was out with another dog, well, that wasn't on Walter. Prue would never have kept her indoors, not without chaining her up. She'd have been out to find me as soon as the door was open.
Oh, now I get you. Well, am I supposed to have said anything else?
No. No, I got that lot off me chest. I said me say. And now you can buy me that drink.
Oh,
but Walter, lay off that other subject if you don't mind. You know, the first subject we discussed about me and Prue.
Oh, dear, oh, Lord, Tom, not a whisper, not a word.
Come on, Amy, lass. Let's be having some service. Well, I'll sit on the light.
Right.
I've got two more specimen films if you want to see them.
No, Philip, I've seen all I want to see. Those films we've just seen were taken with this camera, the one illustrated here.
Yeah, 16mm, colour. Mm. Naturally, you could shoot a bit more cheaply in black and white, but you've got the costs there of a 15-minute colour film.
Silent.
Yes, that particular one was made by the Selfisham Cine Club, and they used subtitles of a silent film, as you saw. I've got a sample of the film they made of the sound commentary dubbed on, but, well, this isn't a sound projector.
Well, that's what you'll have to have. We want a sound projector.
Oh, now, hang on. They come quite a bit more expensive, you know. Even a second-hand
one... I'm not interested in a second-hand anything. And I've seen the prices, don't worry.
Well, I don't want to pour cold water, you know, but...
Yes?
Well, if you're going to buy this camera and a sound projector and a good recording unit... Well, let's put it this way. In the club, we were proposing to go ahead quietly. First, buy a 16mm second-hand, paper it on the HP.
Yes, but surely...
Well, I believe you can get some jolly good reconditioned cameras these days.
No. No, Philip. We'll start off with new equipment. After all, most go-ahead firms today have their own film units, part of their selling and technical information departments, and so must we.
Oh, it's for the business?
Yes. The business needs the equipment to shoot the films we've got to make.
Ah.
But at the same time, you can have it on loan to the club.
What a responsibility.
And it'll be your responsibility. It's going to be high-quality stuff. Needs handling properly and expertly. No rough treatment. Have you seen this sound camera?
No, definitely not. Apart from costing another 1,000 or so, for goodness sake, let's not try to fly before we can crawl.
All right. Well, I always say if you're going to do a thing, go the whole hog and do it properly. Still, I'll be guided by you, Philip.
Yes.
But don't hang about. Now we've decided.
Oh,
Oh, it's no use you thumping plates and pickles and things on the table like that, Mabel. You'll break something in a minute.
I know what I'd like to break, Master Ned.
I know, my neck.
You're right.
Look, I've just come in from the pub, all peaceable and looking for no trouble from nobody. Can't we get on with our supper in peace?
How would you like to be here night after night with nobody to talk to?
I'll buy you a budgerigar.
I'm not joking.
But Mabel, be a bit easy, Jason. For the past fortnight, I've been trying my best to make conversation, and you've been snapping me nose off left, right, and centre.
You and your valentines?
Nay, you needn't start on that lark again. You knows very well that the last thing I'd ever do is make any passes at your claret.
Then why send her a beautiful valentine and me a comic one?
Meaning is you're really jealous. I don't believe it.
Jealous, you silly old chump, you? Course I'm not jealous.
You've been pulling me leg then, is that it?
I certainly wasn't scared that my sister Clarice was likely to steal you away from me. Come to that, I'm not afraid anybody would. They'd have to be a bit hard up.
Now you be careful what you were saying, my wench. I may not be as young and sprightly as I was, but there's many a good tune played on an old fiddle, you know.
And if ever there was a chap who knew how to fiddle, it's Ned Larkin.
Oh, get away with you. My golly, that looks a bit good, Mabel.
Seen faggots and peas afore, haven't you?
I never made the way you make some, me love.
Now to get back to Clarice.
Oh, must we? It'd take a lot to spoil my enjoyment of them faggots. But mention of Clarice goes a long way towards doing just that.
The point about that silly valentine business, Clarice just won't drop it.
Well, perhaps I've never had a valentine before.
Well, I wouldn't know. But she had this one. And somehow or other she gets a lot of satisfaction out of the fact that you sent her a very nice one, and all I got was a comic one. Gets on a body's nerves.
Oh, you leave it with me. I'll sort her out. Now, come on, love. Forget about that there, sister yours. And dish me up a plateful of that supper. Me tongue's hanging out for some of that, Jessup. To the devil with Clarice and her workman.
Oi, good morning.
Eh?
Oh, hello, Paul.
You're off your beaten track a bit this morning.
With reason.
Reason? What then? Want to put a quid or two on something at Selfisham Races?
No, not this time. I want a word with you, Tony.
Oh? Not more rows, I hope. I've resigned from the Johnson Family Row Syndicate.
That's what I want to talk to you about. Before you go into the office, can we go somewhere and have a coffee?
But whatever for? My company seems suddenly to have become attractive, doesn't it?
Stop being so blinking awkward and come and talk, will you?
First of all, what are we going to talk about?
You and Sally.
Nothing to talk about, old boy. Honestly, I kid you not.
There's a hell of a lot to talk about, old boy. Now, you come into the coffee shop quietly, or do I mark you there, you blighter?
Far be it from me to start brawling in the middle of Borchester. I've got a position to keep up if you haven't.
Right, then.
Let's go into the Cush Cap across the road. Doesn't fill up with deadbeats and undernourished jukebox addicts till later on. They haven't crept out from under their flat stones
yet. Come on, then. I dare say you can guess what I want to talk about.
Yes, I think I can. And I can tell you in advance, Paul, you're wasting your time.
You don't understand, Tony. I've come to tell you that I've dropped all my objections to your marrying my sister Sally.
Have you now? That's big of you. That really is. But you're wasting your time, chum. I'm just not interested. Sorry.